Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Kelly Clarkson, and this is Miss Into Podcast.
The Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast, talking all things Kelly and to you.
Here is Jeremy and Pam.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Miss Into Podcast, the Kelly Clarkson Fan Podcast. I'm Jeremy.
And my name is Pam, and today we have a very exciting episode. We are so pumped to invite Robert Venable to the podcast today. Robert is the music mixer on The Kelly Clarkson Show. He's also done some work on some of Kelly's albums, including Piece by Piece, the Kellyoke EP, and When Christmas Comes Around. And this is not the first time that the two of us have spoken to him, or met him, but this is the first time he's going to be on the podcast.
Yes. Yeah, we actually, of all the people that we ran into from Kelly's crew while we were out in Los Angeles, we saw Robert the most. Like, he was staying in the same hotel as us, which was just around the corner from the venue, and he was out roaming the line at the beginning of the show, and then we saw him later on in the show. We saw him the next day. Like, we just kept running into Robert, and it's like, well, if this isn't, you know, a sign that we need to say, hey, by the way, why don't you just come and be on the show? Then I don't know what is. And we're glad to have him today.
Yeah. And I actually first met him last year at the Kelly Clarkson Show, the New York premiere week. Mm-hmm. I didn't really know him. We didn't really know each other very well, but we had just recently started following, like the podcast started following him and he followed us back. And I guess I mentioned something about I was going to be in New York on our stories. I don't remember exactly what happened, but he's like, hey, like, would love to say hi if you're around. I'm like, hell yeah. So he met me in the lobby and it was very quick, like, hey, nice to meet you. I'm Robert. Like, hope you enjoy the show today, blah, blah, blah. And he was so nice. He clearly did not have to do that because he is, as we're going to learn, he does quite a bit on the Kellyokes, mm-hmm, and the entire talk show as a whole. So the fact that he like came up and said hi for a few minutes was like the nicest thing ever. And we've been trying to find a time literally since last August to get him on, and just like life's been happening and we finally were able to make it happen. And I am so pumped and so excited that we have him on today.
Before we get to Robert, there was a lot to cover in the last week leading up to the release of the Chemistry album on Friday. And Pam, before we start talking about, you know, all the stuff that you got to experience, I just want to say that Kelly was extraordinarily busy in that last week, sort of the last sprint up to the release of the album. And, you know, there were a lot of fans being naysayers and, you know, like, oh, you know, they're not doing enough promo. There's not enough promo. We haven't done enough. They're not doing anything. They're screwing up the era. They're screwing this up. When we knew good and well that the majority and the real big crush of promotion for the new album was going to happen the week of the release, because that's how short everyone's attention spans are. So she did all kinds of fun stuff for fans leading up to the week of the album. And then it was pedal to the metal, hitting all the shows, all the interviews, all the things. And we're still getting stuff even after the album comes out.
And I think it's cool because like a lot of promo nowadays, like, I mean, TV is obviously very, very, very important. But obviously with the writer's strike, she was very limited about what she could be doing for TV promo, like a lot of late night.
Yeah.
But podcasts, and I'm not just saying this because we do a podcast, but like podcasts are like such a popular medium. You know, there's so many celebs have them, and they're typically free. So it's been so great for her to be doing like basically the podcast circuit.
That was the new thing kind of this album cycle, is the podcast circuit, as it were. I mean, she did Andy Cohen, and she did Dax Shepard, and
Glennon Doyle,
Conan O'Brien. I mean, it's us.
You know, I mean, there's a lot.
You might as well throw us in there. And that wasn't even all of them. I mean, there's probably some that haven't released yet that we don't know about. She did countless interviews with radio and television and things that we probably haven't even seen or didn't see, because we just can't cover the entire world. And that's the other thing, too, is that normally here on the podcast, we kind of do like a wrap up of a lot of the press that she does. There was just simply so much in the week leading up to the release of the album. I mean, we could do an entire episode just talking about Glennon Doyle, Conan O'Brien, Howard Stern, Dax Shepard. I mean, there was a lot just with those interviews, yeah. Not to mention everything else that she did. But we want to talk about a few different things in particular because, as they say in the news biz, we had a man on the street, so to speak.
A woman on the street.
A woman on the street in this case. Yes. And, you know, I was so excited to get to see from afar all the excitement in New York City while Kelly was there doing press for the album. And I'm going to let you sort of take over from here because you really got to be at the heart of a lot of the New York promo this week.
Yeah, it was a whirlwind. The you know, there was like a 3 or 4 day stretch where it was just like, what is my life right now? You know, I guess in total there were about 4 events I was able to, you know, witness, be a part of, whatever. Some of it I was able to get on my own. Some of it I was invited. So I'll do a brief recap right here. So the first thing that I was able to go to was the town hall, the Andy Cohen interview that she did on Sirius XM. It was on Wednesday, last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We found out about it about a week beforehand, and our friend Nicole actually told us about it. She got an email because she's a Sirius XM subscriber. She sent me the form to fill out. And she also sent it to Rob. Rob didn't get in, and I did. Yeah. And I think it's because I used to subscribe. I haven't paid in like 5 years, but I guess I'm still in their database, so I got in.
I guess it would be for subscribers, wouldn't it?
Yes, but then they opened it up afterwards, which is what most people saw on like Instagram, where it was like, hey, if you want to go, send an email to this email address. That's what most people did. Anyway, I was expecting, like, I don't know, 50 people there. I counted. There were 18 chairs. 18 chairs in that room.
Wow.
And I probably knew about 13 or 14 of those 18.
Yeah, it was like...
Which is hilarious.
It was a lot of the OG New York fan yeah. crew, which was cool to see everybody kind of under one roof again.
It was awesome. So I didn't really know what to expect, but it was a really great interview. I believe it has aired at this point.
Yeah.
Our friend Bix has a lot of just like links up on Twitter if you've missed any interviews, but it was a really entertaining interview and it was just like a really great way to like kick off the chemistry era, so to speak.
Yeah.
I won't get into specifics because you can listen to the interview. It's out there. It was, you know, part of it was serious. Part of it was really funny. And it was just a very cool, intimate vibe to be able to be in a room with that little people and able to just like literally be like a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
It was very, very interesting though, because throughout the interview, he kept referencing, being like, blah, 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 Rock Hudson out now. So like, are we assuming Rock Hudson is like officially like the next single, like legitimate, like single they're pushing?
Is that literally what he said was yes. Rock Hudson out now?
Yes.
Cause.
Yes. Multiple times.
Because I think that the interview didn't officially air until after the album released.
It aired Thursday or Friday.
Okay. I thought so, it didn't air until the album released. So maybe he was saying it in the way of like, you know, you can now hear this song. It's out now. I don't know. I have not seen anything, at least on my radio end, that Rock Hudson yeah. has been sent out as a single. I haven't seen any sort of promotion in the radio trades about a new single from Kelly. I mean, as far as I have seen, mine is still kind of hanging in there on
yeah.
the Hot AC and AC charts. It's, you know, it's kind of stalling out in the sort of the between 10 and 15 range. But nonetheless, I have not seen anything about Rock Hudson being an official second single. So that's all sort of just speculation at this point.
Totally. I'm totally speculating. But it was just like we were all very confused in the room. We're like, huh, weird. Anyway, yeah. Great interview. And then at the end, I don't remember exactly like what the business politics, whatever is, but I think a couple years ago, Sirius XM acquired Pandora, or they merged. I think they
yeah.
acquired. They acquired.
Yeah, they bought them. Yeah,
the bottom. Okay. So they ended up, a couple people ended up coming in and presenting Kelly with a plaque. She entered the Billions Club. She has over 1 billion Pandora streams. That was really cool because Kelly was not expecting it whatsoever. She was a little confused why people were in there. And then she was like, oh my God, I got a plaque. And then she was like, can you mail it to Montana for me? It was really cute. So that was that. And then we were kind of like sitting around, kind of like waiting to get like let out of the room and to, you know, leave. And they're like, everyone's, you know, stick around. We're going to like, everyone's going to hear it's going to meet Kelly. We're like, whoa, that's awesome. So you were technically supposed to get your meet and greet photo with your guest. So Rob and I have a picture together. At the time that I'm doing this, I still don't have it. Even though it was almost a week ago, I still don't have the photo. It was super quick, though. It was about 20 seconds. So what does Pam say? And I was like smacking myself. I was like hitting my head like afterwards. I was like, why the hell did you say this? First of all, I thanked her for coming on because she was like, oh, long time no see. And I'm like, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. We really appreciated it. We got such good feedback. And then I proceed to say, so I'm seeing you on Friday. I promise I'm not creeping on you. why did I feel like I need to be saying that? But then she was like, oh my God, no, I'm excited. And that was literally my conversation with Kelly at SiriusXM. It was so, so stupid on my end, but it was great.
It was funny because Pam and I were texting leading up to it. And I even said, I said, you need to warn her that you are going to run into her multiple times this week. And to not think that, you know, you're stalking her, that you're invited to a lot of things that she's also going to be a part of.
Yeah. So that she thought it was funny. I must have said that to her at least one or two other times throughout the week. I did. And I also said it to people at Atlantic. Be like, I promise. And they're like, we know. We want you here. I'm like, okay, thank you. But before I even went in for this event, I was hanging out in like the little lobby and I bumped into Weiss and I bumped into Robert Ramos, her hair person.
Yeah.
And I was talking with them a bit. I ended up in Robert's Instagram reel by mistake. The reason how that happened was because I was taking a picture with Kyle and Rob with the step-in repeat, the Sirius XM backdrop.
Yeah.
And then Weiss and Robert were like taking a video and like I kind of got in the background and then I was kind of like, well, I have to commit to the bit. So I was just kind of like, hey, and I kind of like got in the background and then Robert was like, let's get a video. I'm like, okay. So we met each other in that moment. So yeah, Robert's going to be coming on to the podcast soon. I completely missed my opportunity to ask Weiss if he wants to come on because when I was talking with him, they were like, all right, everyone, we have to get in the room. Let's go. And I'm like, okay, bye. Nice to meet you. So Weiss, if you're listening, we love to have you on the podcast, but I will also message you.
Yes.
Anyway, that was SiriusXM. It was really fun. It was a good afternoon. So then later that day, I got a message from Atlantic that was like, hey, Pam, if you happen to be around tomorrow in any of these locations at these times, like, you may want to pop by, winky face. And I'm like, okay. So it worked out. I had a, you know, I was able to, it kind of coincided a bit with my lunch break at work,
yeah,
which was wonderful. So, and then like, right when it happened, right before it happened, they ended up tweeting it out. So I was like, okay. I was like, I promise I knew about this like about 14 hours in advance, but whatever. So I show up to like the Rainbow Room 30 Rock entrance and I'm just waiting there in true fashion. She was like 45 minutes late.
Yep.
I didn't get there right on time anyway, but like anyway. Point being though, she I guess ended up performing on the plaza. She performed Down to You, like one of her little flash mobby kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then walked down 50th Street where I was with a group of people, including my friend Kyle. And she looked, they were like hustling her and her whole team and the Atlantic team and like all these singers. They're like hustling down 50th Street. They walk by me and she looks and points. She goes, oh, that's Pam. I'm like, oh my God. Anyway, and then someone from Atlantic like kind of like waved to me, was like, come on. So I like, we all go with them, say hi to Robert again. We go down into the subway station, the Rockefeller Center subway station. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. And we just like kind of stand around. And then all of a sudden they just start singing Mine and they do it for about 1 minute. And then everyone leaves. I'm like, what now? Because like originally it was supposed to be 30 Rock, the subway station, and Ellen Stardust Diner. They canceled the diner, So I thought it was just those two locations. And I was like, all right, well, I'm going to go back to work now. My lunch breaks up. I'm going back. And then they ended up in Central Park to sing Lighthouse. So I missed that, but that's okay. But
yeah,
that was wild. But I'm like, what a cool lunch break.
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, like once the thing happened, it was literally like a minute or two. I'm like, okay, I guess I'm done. but a really wonderful experience. And I was able to get most of it on video. My like thumb crapped out during it. So if you go on our Instagram, you'll see that I posted two videos because I just was like, ah, I don't know how to use my phone. And I stopped in the middle of it for whatever reason. I stopped. And so you'll see most of it. So what a wild, that was wild. Okay.
Yeah.
Then Thursday night happened. Thursday night was insane. So we had gotten an email from Atlantic about a week or so ago, inviting us to some pre-release party at a piano bar. And they were like, it's going to be the Atlantic team, Kelly's team, and a couple of fans, singing Kelly music. We're going to celebrate chemistry. Kelly will pop in for a song or two and to do a toast. And I'm like, all right, this sounds fun. And then like leading up to it, like a day or so beforehand, I heard more fans going, which was great. So I knew a couple of other people going, but it still was pretty hush hush because like,
yeah,
they couldn't really get the word out to everyone because then they were going to have like hundreds of people outside. So they kept it pretty tiny. I would say the room, I don't know, I'm not really great at math, but I would say like no more than 60 to 75 people in that room, maybe less. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I saw a video of, I think it was from Kelly's live stream that somebody did on Instagram. They did do a quick pan of the crowd and it did look like a smaller room. I would have actually said somewhere around 100, but you were obviously, you knew better because you were in the room. So I mean, 60 to 70 people in a bar that size, still not bad.
Yeah, maybe 75, but give or take, it was small regardless.
Yeah.
They had, so we got in, we were told get there for 6 o'clock because Kelly's had a long day and she wants to, you know, do the toast around 6:15 and leave. So I got there for 6 o'clock and was hanging out with a bunch of people. They had some chemistry inspired cocktails. It was really cute. Kelly paid for Kelly, her team, whatever, paid for the whole bar for the whole night. So it was open bar courtesy of Clarkson. So thank you, Kelly. which is wonderful. And yeah, so she eventually showed up while someone on stage was singing Hazel Eyes and she was loving it. And she stayed for like probably at least an hour or so and sang with a bunch of people. And like, I've had my moment to sing badly with Kelly. I've spoken about it before for a whole lot of women like 5 years ago. And I'm like, all right, been there, done that. Let other people have their moment. Well, Moni went on stage to try to sing Breakaway, but then someone else had just performed it. So she chose a different song and I didn't know what it was. Next thing I know, I hear Pam and Rob come up to the stage. I'm like, oh no. Oh no. And at this point I was a little drunk because I didn't have dinner. So Rob and I go on stage and Rob's like, what song is it? And Kelly goes, good luck, it's Stronger. So we get on stage and then like the piano starts playing and then I start into the mic. And then Kelly thought that was funny. I'm like, I don't know. So yeah, we sing it. We sing it pretty badly. And then once it gets to the bridge, like the high note, I just give my mic and give it to Kelly. I'm like, Kelly, you're doing this. I didn't ask her. I don't know why I felt the need to just like assume that she would just be singing, but I'm like, all right, Kelly, it's you. And I'm like, oh no. But it was really fun. At the end, she was like, you gave me the hardest part. You know, I don't know what I said to her. And thank God she laughed because I'm like, oh my God, why did I say this? I jumped. I'm like, that's why they pay you the big bucks. I'm like, oh my God, I sound like such an asshole. But she thought it was she thought it was really funny.
I was earlier in the week, I told her to shut up. So we're doing great as a podcast.
We're doing great. We're so polite, apparently.
We feel very comfortable around her.
Maybe a little too comfortable. I'm not sure. Yeah. But I was like, I'm sorry, I'm drunk. She's like, as you should be. I'm like, okay. but it was just a really fun night. Like the Atlantic team was there. They were all super, super nice. And a lot of their team went up to sing. A lot of fans went up to sing. There was like a list of songs to choose from. By the way, I saw some people that were like, why didn't you sing this? Why didn't you sing this? Like the piano player had to learn songs. So it's like there was only about 15 songs to choose from and they were mainly singles. But
So this was like live karaoke. This wasn't from like a backing track.
No, there was a piano player named Wendy. I think her name was Wendy. Shout out to Wendy. She was wonderful. No, it was like a legitimate like piano player playing the songs live, like right there.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. So I met a lot of people from Atlantic there. They were so nice. They were so supportive of the podcast. They thanked us for doing what we do. And I'm like, oh my God, it's of course it's my pleasure. This is my passion project. Like, I'm going to keep doing it until I can't no more. So they were all just like really, really nice there. And so shout out to Atlantic for just everything. You guys are so cordial and so nice. And it was a really, really fun night just be with other Kelly fans and scream her music.
I know that you were having a good time because I was getting text messages. Mind you, at the exact same time that Pam and fashion correspondent Rob are in New York at a karaoke bar with Kelly Clarkson, I'm in the Midwest. I'm at a Chris Stapleton show. I'm like literally standing in the pit between the stage and the crowd. I'm getting ready to take photos of the show, and I'm getting all these texts from Pam. It's like, I'm drunk. I just sang with Kelly. I miss you. Where are you? And she goes, somebody from Atlantic said, where are you? And I'm like, in the fucking Midwest. Like, I'm sorry. I wanted to be there. I know I got invited too, but damn.
So sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. I was having the best time like reading your texts as they were coming through between you and Rob, like texting during the whole evening. It was just gold content. Let me tell you.
It was a whirlwind. It was bizarre. It was wonderful. So that was that.
Yes. So that's Thursday.
That was Thursday. But wait, there's more.
But wait.
And I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I missed specifically, but I mean, that was like the general gist of those days. Oh, let me read off some of the cocktail names in case anyone is interested.
Oh, yeah.
We have the Red Flag. We have Steve Martin's Banjo. We have Eternal Sunshine. And we have Favorite Kind of Rye.
Hey.
Which I like. Those are great names. And yeah, I have some photos and videos. I know I like haven't done my recap post yet because I'm waiting for my SiriusXM photo, but I don't know when that's coming. So I might just do this soon. Maybe for Wednesday I'll do it. And then last but not least, I think this event, even though it was so short, probably made up like just was the highlight of the entire week. So she did the Barnes & Noble signing, which was a complete shit show. In general, just they sold like 600 tickets. I thought this was going to be like a small thing, maybe 2 to 3 max, 200 or 300 max. They did like 600, and like she was there for like 3 or 4 hours signing. That's insane.
And considering how much we heard about how like she basically developed carpal tunnel from signing all of the CDs for the pre-release, the fact that she had to sit there at Barnes and Noble for 4 hours and sign again. Like, you felt bad for her.
And it wasn't one of those, like, signings where she sits behind a table and then you just get, like, an awkward table photo. No, she didn't sit the whole time. She stood up the whole time, hugged you, had a mini conversation with you until the guards were like, ma'am, get out of here. So then you had to move. But, like, she was super engaged. And, like, how amazing is that? No, most people would just be like, okay, you'll get a picture awkwardly in front of the table and, like, that's that. Yeah. No, like, she – so – you know, it was such a long line. Like, I really didn't realize they had sold that many tickets because it sold out so fast. That's why I was so confused. But
at the same time, I mean, whenever something like that happens, I mean, they definitely approve the number of people. Because what they probably did was they probably said, okay, if we do this many people per hour, Kelly is committed to be there for X number of hours. We figure we can probably get this many people.
Exactly. So I don't know what the deal was. But I mean, the staff was great. I just feel like, oh my God, they oversold it. But whatever. Yeah. She made it through. But yeah, I was online for like 3 hours in the rain. So that was fun. I got to hang out with one of our listeners, Jordan, and his husband, Adam. So they were Jordan was on one of our episodes. They were lovely. So I got to hang out with them for like 3 hours.
And we saw them at Belasco too, didn't we?
We did. We saw them outside Belasco for a minute. And I think they're going to be in Vegas as well.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I got to meet some of you. A few of you came up to me and were like, asking for a photo and or just want to say hi, and I appreciate it, and it was so nice to meet all of you. I got equally as many messages after the fact saying, I saw you but didn't say hi. I was too shy. I'm like, guys, I'm so not cool. Like, I'm just a Kelly fan. Like, but I get it. I get it. But next time, feel free to say hello, because I literally got people that were like, I saw you but didn't say hi. I'm like, hi. Like, hi.
I told you though that this was going to happen.
Oh, I know. But anyway, so I think what made Barnes & Noble so special was because there were 600 people or albums, or I don't know if it was people or orders or whatever. She had a lot of signing to do. She was supposed to personalize all these, and due to time constraints, she literally just signed Kelly on everyone's thing. I think a few people like asked her like, "Hey, can you sign, you know, this lyric or this message or whatever," and she would have done it, but I would say 95% of the people there just got Kelly. So I go up to her and she's like, "Oh, what's up, Pam?" And I'm like, "Oh my god!" And again, for like the third time, I'm like, "I promise, like, I'm sorry you're seeing me so much." She's like, "Oh, stop it." So I just, you know, I was so super quick, and I was just telling her how much, you know, how proud I am of her for this album. Like, you know, she didn't have to do this. And I am so appreciative of her sharing this with us. And I mentioned a few of my favorite songs so far and how much, you know, that they're really helping me out through a hard time right now. And, you know, I'm not looking at her, like, signing my album. I'm just kind of, like, looking at her. We do our photo. I have to leave. And then when I leave, I look down at my album. And she personalized it, and I did not ask her to do it. And she wrote, "Pam, love you." And I like was like, "Oh my god!" So as soon as I got home, I was like, I just like started bawling when I got home. I like held it in for like being, you know, leaving Barnes and Noble and on my way home, but I just like lost it on my way home. I was just like, all of this has been like worth something, you know, like. Yeah. My 20 years of being a fan, a lot of that being like isolated as a fan or just having friends on the internet, not having people in my life, then finding friends in this community, doing this podcast, putting so much damn time into it and loving it. And to just get that little message, which I'm sure probably didn't mean as much to her, obviously as much to her as it did to me. I was just like, it's like all worth it.
Yeah.
And I lost it. And it really made the week so special, just having that message. So I'm definitely going to frame this.
Oh, absolutely.
So it was just like such a fulfilling week. And I don't take a second of it for granted. I know how fortunate I am to not only live in the New York area, but also like I got to be invited to assert a few things as well. And, you know, I'm really thank you so much to Atlantic and Kelly's team for giving me the access so that I can share it with you guys. So it was just a really, really, really crazy whirlwind of a week. And I will be doing some sort of recap post in the next couple days. But figured this was the best way to like get all the info out rather than just like an Instagram caption. So
yeah,
I missed you so much. And I'm so bummed that you couldn't come. But you also sent me such a sweet message afterwards. You're like, "Listen, I'm so proud of you for doing this. I'm so proud of you for like representing the podcast and whatever." And I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna cry." And I did.
I mean, that's an emotionally exhausting week, because, you know, we have been the stuff that you said about being a fan aside, I mean, in addition to that, you know, just you and I, just the two of us, we've been talking about the lead up to this week. And when I say this week, I mean the release week, for the last 2.5 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've even prior to that have been sort of preparing for a new album cycle. And there's been so much conversation and so much back and forth and so much anticipation and so many exciting moments, you know, when songs get released and, you know, we get these little snippets here and there of things to come. And then for all of it to happen, I mean, really what a lot of you guys who are listening don't really know is that a lot of the really cool stuff that Pam and to an extent me got to experience really kind of came together just in the last month or so.
Yeah.
And really kind of the last like 3 weeks. Because we did our interview with Kelly back on the 5th of June. And that was really kind of the beginning of like the real craziness. And then, you know, these invites start coming for things in New York and, you know, little DMs from people of, you know, giving us heads ups of things that are coming, you know, all of that. Plus, you know, just an overall exhausting week, I'm sure, for you in release week and all these different events. I can imagine that just it was sort of this big, giant buildup. And then when it's done, you just kind of have this release. You know, there was so much to look forward to. There was so much going on. And then you kind of knew that Barnes & Noble was like the finish line. I mean, you literally in that point had the record in your hand physically for the first time. And you realize this is the moment that we've been working towards for the last two and a half months. And then you just kind of get to exhale.
Yeah.
For a bit, because, you know, now we've got the build up to Las Vegas and, you know, that's going to be a whole thing. But I meant it. You know, the text that I sent you, I was so proud of you for everything that you did and all the coverage that you shared with everybody. It was so much fun, even though obviously I was insanely jealous. At the same time, I was so excited to just see everything that you and everybody else was getting to do out on the East Coast. And I'm just so happy that she included the fans in so much of the rollout of this album. And I hope that stuff like that happens again in the future. And I just am so, I'm so thankful for you being there so that we could get kind of brought inside a little bit and see a lot of it.
Yeah. You know, I was talking to one of our main people at Atlantic, and I'm purposely saying that because I'm not sure they really necessarily want to be like name dropped. So that's why I'm kind of vague about it.
Oh, sure.
And I actually said this to a few people, and I said it probably multiple times. They were probably so sick of hearing it, but like, for real. But I was like, you guys don't understand. Like, obviously, there's been like over the last two decades, of course, there's been, you know, fan engagement and fan interaction. Don't get me wrong, but for some reason, and I'm not just saying this because of the podcast, but I mean, even random people like on Twitter who maybe got like a DM from Atlantic, like something as small as that, but small and impactful as that. This has been like the most exciting time in many years to be a Kelly fan because of how much access and interaction both her label and her team is giving to fans and how much involvement they're giving us. Even the signing, even though it was a paid thing, it's still access. It's still opportunity. Where I've never been to a Kelly album signing before. And, you know, I've been a fan for a while. Like it's they're doing such great work getting the fans so excited and so engaged and really just dedicated to this album and to this whole project and era. So I kept thanking them. I'm like, listen, on behalf of everyone, like, thank you for what you're doing and like, keep it up because we love it on our end. Like we're just eating it all up and I'm just super grateful for them. So, yes, I'm back to reality now. but the fun part is we get to, you know, we're planning for Vegas. So it's just, there's so many cool things happening, even though we're still getting content, you know, from Chemistry coming in, whether that's interviews or whatever. And, you know, the residency is going to be here before we know it. It's going to be here in like about a month. So we have a lot of awesome stuff to look forward to. And then after that, it'll be the talk show in New York. There's more exciting things. So it's just going to be a really fun year for us as fans.
It really is. And we are so glad that you all are along with us for the ride. We're nothing special. We're just simply a vessel, as Kelly would like to say. And, you know, we are so glad to be able to bring you guys along on these adventures, like all of the stuff that Pam got to do. And we thank you guys for sharing your photos and videos. You know, I can't count how many times somebody sent us a video or a photo of their interactions, whether it be something, you know, during the release week, whether it was in the subway somewhere or 30 Rock, or if they were at the karaoke night, we got so many people sending us their Barnes & Noble photos, and even, you know, people sending us their pictures from like Target when they're rearranging the albums in front of all the others. I mean, which is a classic, you know, old school Kelly fan move. It's been so fun to be a part of this with all of you guys, and we hope that you have enjoyed the content that the podcast has been able to bring, whether it be in the actual show or on the streets, literally. So thank you for coming on the ride with us as well. This has been so much fun to bring all of this stuff to you and to say that we are excited about what's to come in Vegas and in New York with the talk show would be a massive understatement.
Yeah. Amen to that. Seriously, I echo everything that you say. And we have just so much exciting content in the next couple of weeks, including for some stuff from when we were out in LA. But without further ado, we're going to get started with our interview today, which is someone that we actually got to hang out with a bit in LA.
And he's become a new friend of the podcast. He is a mixer, producer, engineer, and hell, he's even a drummer. He's Robert Venable. Hey, buddy, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing? It's good to see you
good.
Again.
Hi, Robert. It's so good to see you again, this time virtually. Are in your studio in Nashville. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm at my studio actually on my property here in Nashville. Finally, happy to be home. I think we saw each other out in LA a few weeks ago.
So this is
what I look like in a different state.
More chill, not wearing black, not having a hat on.
Yeah, this is totally not normal. But this is a special occasion, so I dressed up in white.
Oh, we appreciate that.
We appreciate it.
Yes.
I want to ask you on a very high level, you know, speaking for me and probably for a lot of people listening who may not be super musical, techie, whatever that might be, what does a music mixer do? Very high level.
Very high level. I take... Yes. Okay, so when a band or a musician plays, there are mics recording what they're doing. So my job... after it's captured through the microphones into the system, is to take all those different microphone signals, all those different tracks, whether it be all the different drums or the vocals or whatever it may be. And I process each of them kind of individually and as a group. So if you just hit record and all the microphones are at the same level, it's going to sound like a bunch of garbage. I mean, even with the best bands, things have to be EQ'd and kind of mixed, volume turned up, volume turned down. Boost a little bit of high-end frequencies, low-end stuff, add reverb, make them sound like they're, I don't know, in the shower or in a cave or whatever I need to do, and just blend it all together. So my mix, as I'm mixing it all together, all the ingredients to the chocolate chip cookies, and at the end, you have my mix, which is the cookie. You got it all put together. It's all baked. It sounds right. It tastes right. So my job is to try to, you know, even add a little artistic flair to it when I'm given that little bit of room to take that liberty and just, you know, taking all the instruments, making it sound like what you hear on the radio. That's a very like skin level, surface level idea of what I do.
But I think that's very easy to digest if we're still on the food topic. I think it's easy to digest, especially like for me. I mean, you saw me in LA. I had no idea what the hell you were doing, but I was fascinated by it. So it's just... it's a science. It really is what you do.
Yeah.
And we'll get into it a bit more, but it's just what you do is so damn cool.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I agree. Thank you.
Yeah. we're definitely going to get into more of the cookie recipe again, if we're staying on the food analogies here. But I guess we want to go back and we want to start at the beginning, Robert. You know, tell us what it was that sort of got you involved in your love of music. I mean, did you have like some musicians or artists that you sort of gravitated to that sort of told you, hey, this might be the avenue that I want to pursue?
You know, it started at a young age. My parents told me that I used to bang on the pots and pans before I could even talk. So kind of playing drums around whatever I had. And when I was about 9 years old, my aunt divorced her husband. And just, you know, kind of out of spite, part of the thing was she took his drum set, a vintage Slingerland drum kit from the 60s, in part of the settlement, and then just gave it to me, which I mean, it's multi-thousands of dollars worth of stuff, and it probably made him really mad. And then she just mailed it to Arkansas where I was living. And so I learned to play drums. So I played throughout school, junior high and high school on the drum line, and was going to go to college for drums, but decided to go to college as a vocal performance major.
Really? Yeah. So you sing as well?
No, I'm horrible. I had a full scholarship, and I think it's because I could blend well, because I was a baritone bass, depending on who you asked. And the college needed that in the choir. So I would come in and I couldn't read music very well, but I could learn it really quickly by ear. I could predict what was coming next. You know, once I heard it once or twice, I had it memorized. So I got a full scholarship somehow. by the grace of God, to go to college for that. But then they wanted to teach me how to do more like Italian arias and classical singing. And I wanted to be Justin Timberlake or something like that. I was like, teach me how to sing solo. And they're like, we don't do that. Right. So at that point, it was kind of a decision I had to make on where I was going to go in life. I was also playing baseball. I wanted to play baseball professionally. Who doesn't? If you're playing baseball, why wouldn't you want to go pro? Everybody has the dream of being the best right. in the industry.
Sure.
But when I went to college, I realized like being good in a small town in Arkansas is not the same as being good at a university where these people are scouted and brought in from all over the country. I'm like, okay, so baseball's off the table here. I want to do music, but maybe not as a drummer, maybe not as a singer. Maybe it's more of the science of mixing and recording. That's intriguing. Mm-hmm. So I was going to do, I saw an ad in a magazine. It was like $150 for a remote, not even remote at the time. That wasn't even a thing, but like an online kind of like you go there and watch the videos and we'll give you a certificate saying you're a music mixer. It was $150. And I'm like, Mom, this is what I'm going to do. My mom's like, don't do that. If you're going to do it right. So I went out to the University of Central Arkansas. I transferred over to the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences out in Phoenix, Arizona, and went through that program. And then I'm like, this is my home. This is where I need to be. And I ended up staying night and day at this school, just being a studio rat, learning, soaking it all in, trying to like just absorb as much information as I could from the people who were doing it professionally. And I attributed a lot of that to my success. Rather than like going there, punching my card, doing the test and leaving, I went there and stayed and I asked questions right. and I'm like, took notes. I watched all the settings they would do when they were doing examples and asked, why do you do this? Why does this work? And so I think I attribute a lot of that to like piquing my interest into more and digging in more and grabbing more information. And the internet wasn't huge. It was dial up. So you don't have that time to just get on and YouTube stuff or like
it would take you like 6 hours to watch a 3 minute video, you know.
It would sometimes take me 6 hours to log on to the internet and I finally hear it. But yeah, you're right. So that's kind of, I guess, what steered me to the pro audio world away from being a musician. But I didn't have any, I mean, I listened to a lot of what my parents listened to, like Chicago, Jim Croce, America, like a lot of those like 60s, 70s bands. I love the Beach Boys. The harmonies in there were crazy. And like, mm-hmm. And also like I attribute a lot of my ability to come up with harmonies and enjoyment for harmonies and melodic sounds. I grew up in church. And so a lot of people singing and they sang like different parts and stuff. So that to me, I'm like, oh, I hear this and this and this and this, and it makes a chord. I'm like, that's kind of cool. So just, you know, I had that every Sunday. And then, you know, choir in high school and band in high school and all that stuff just added together and kind of just made me who I am, I guess.
You're just like a mutt
yeah,
of everything.
I'm a musical mutt, and I need that to be on my shirt.
You're a musical mutt. A musical mutt, because, you know, I was doing a little reading up on you, and you've worked at some point in your career in almost every single genre.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I haven't done a polka record yet.
There's time for
that. I think, yeah, I got time. We can do it.
Yeah.
I feel like you could probably find some people that could hook you up with, like, Weird Al or something.
Dude, I have tweeted Weird Al. I have emailed Weird Al because I love Weird Al. Like, that's my style of humor. I'm like, this is great. It's like dad jokes in the song. Why not?
That's right.
But yeah.
I'm just going to go off a tangent personal story for 30 seconds. I met him once.
No.
I was working. I swear. I was working. I used to do, like, pre-COVID, I used to do, like, freelance, like, VIP concert work just to get some extra money. So I worked a Weird Al concert at Forest Hill Stadium in New York. It was about 100 degrees outside and we had to wear wigs in order, like, he wanted everyone to dress up in costume, anyone who was working the show. So I was wearing like a giant, I have to find a picture. I'll show it to you. But anyway, I got one moment with him and I had to go, I was like a runner and I had to go bring him a water bottle and he said thank you to me. And that's it. I was like, he's nice. He says thank you to a little old me. So
that's so good.
If he can give me 5 seconds of attention, he can definitely give you like 5 hours of attention.
I don't need five.
It's going to happen.
I'll settle for 5 seconds of attention. Just like a high five.
Just for a high five. It's going to happen. Because I was going back reading a little bit more, and you know, you got a lot of your professional start doing a lot of like metal and hip hop.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
Because I think that's really, really cool.
Okay. So to pick up where I left off, I'm at the Conservatory of Recording Arts and Sciences in Phoenix, Arizona, or the Phoenix metro area. And I was one of the few. There's only 11 people in my class, right? So it's a very tight knit. We all go through all the courses together. We learn and love each other. It's great. Like a tight knit group of guys and girls. I didn't have a job. I was one of the people who saved up money and was fortunate enough to not work. So that's why I was able to be a studio rat. Because I was there all the time, the president of the school came into our particular class and said, "Hey, Robert, I need to talk to you out here for a second." They pulled me out of class. I'm like, "What did I do?" And said, "Hey, I know you don't have a job, so you have availability." I'm like, "Okay." And it's against our policy to let you intern while you're still here, but we need an assistant.
Really?
Need an assistant.
Wouldn't they want you to?
Not until you're fully trained, because they don't want you going there and not, you know, not knowing how to use the tools and then not being a good representation of what the school can teach. So I'm in the middle of courses and he's like, "You got the time. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but they need an assistant, basically an intern to hang out at the studio. And so when you leave here, just go straight there every day for like months." I'm like, "All right, I don't know who it is. I'll do it." And it ended up being Dave Mustaine from Megadeth. So I was in the studio with Megadeth for 2.5 months while they're working on the System Has Failed album, and started off like I'm still in school. So I started off emptying out. I tell the story a lot. He had a trash can that he would sing a line or sing a few lines. He'd chew some Ruffles potato chips and drink some apple juice, swish it around in his mouth and spit it into the trash can. So my sole job was to empty that trash can whenever like I felt like it'd been marinating in Dave Mustaine's soup enough. And so I would take it and empty it. I learned how to make coffee. I still don't even drink coffee, but I learned how to make it. And then like, you know, wipe down the bathroom at the end of the night. And a very basic, low level intern. And that's what I expect any intern would start doing. So that's what I did. And it quickly changed to, "Hey, Robert, do you know Pro Tools?" And I haven't learned Pro Tools yet at this point, but I went, "Yeah." And in my brain, I'm going, "Uh-uh, I have no idea." So I spent 6 hours dialing up to the internet at home and printed off all of the like the quick commands in the handbook for Pro Tools. And like, I didn't even know what half the things were, but I could figure it out. I'm like, "All right, here's how to like cut something. Here's how to like paste it and copy it." And like all the stuff, I started learning it and I memorized it. I just started going right down the list, memorizing all these things. And I went in there and they were like, "Okay, we need you to run Pro Tools for a little while." And it ended up like miking them up on some stuff, recording some guitar solos. I ended up singing on the record, which is interesting. Screaming, kind of scream singing, like background vocals.
Oh my, I'm like, that's incredible.
So it started off as like the lowest level of intern and ended up engineering and singing on the record, which is crazy. So that's how I got my start in metal. But being out in Phoenix, there's also a lot of hip hop. So another studio, after that project was done, I moved to a different studio as an intern. And it was like DMX and Rough Riders and D12. And like all these people were coming in and like the coolest cars ever. But so many stories I could tell of just being around that. Like I get paid in envelopes of cash by a little woman that had a briefcase of envelopes of cash. I'm like, it's a very hip hop thing to do. So yeah, that's how I got my start.
Super sus.
It was. And that's kind of how I transitioned out of it. I'm like, this is starting to get a little like I'm a fish out of water in this industry. Because a lot of it was standing around waiting. I'd loop the same 8 bars. They'd be sitting in there all head bobbing, writing lyrics like, "All right, play it back." And they'd sit, they'd like rap a line or something. And everybody like, "Yeah, that's cool. All right, 8 bars again." And I would just sit there for hours while the same 8 bars of the song would go on and on and on. I'm like, I want to do more. I want to be more creative. So I kind of jumped from that and got into like the rock, pop rock, punk rock thing was happening at that time. And that's where I learned a lot, was just kind of getting into that with real instruments, not pre-programmed tracks, learning how to mic up drums in real life outside of a schooling situation. So yeah,
that is like that is proof. Fake it till you make it. That is just the proof. Yeah.
I don't condone that activity, but it worked somehow. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love that. So were you very much like you can appreciate all different styles of music? Because like you said, you know, from what you were saying, you know, you were very much into like 60s and 70s singer-songwriter kind of music. That was sort of what you were brought up on. And then here you are living in the metal world for a few months, and then you're going into the hip-hop world. Did that give you more of a broader appreciation for all different styles of music and how to produce and mix different styles?
Great question. Absolutely. And I was never closed off to other genres. There are genres of music I don't like. I'm not going to go land on that radio station while on a road trip. But I appreciate it and I hear the talent and I do listen. I can listen to it and go, I wonder how they made that sound. Oh, I bet I know how they did that. And I can use those little, I call it ear candy, like those little tricks and ear candy things to throw into other genres of music. So doing the hip hop thing, I learned a lot about how to process hip hop drums and maybe synth sounds. And then I, like right now, you know, if I'm mixing Kelly Clarkson, I know how I'm going to do that kick, that synth kick sound. I know how I'm going to do this thing that Jason's playing over here because of this history from the hip hop section. And then like, maybe it's like the snare sound from the metal stuff that I want to put on Lester's snare drum or something like that. And like, I can attribute all these little tricks in my bag of tricks, all these ingredients in my pantry to make a better cookie at the end of the day.
I love that the cookie is going to be like our overarching theme.
Oh, I'm holding on to it.
Oh, I know, I appreciate it. Yeah. So speaking of Kelly, so we fast forward after you've worked with all these different artists. Tell us how you first get involved with Kelly Clarkson, because it's roughly around the Piece by Piece album, right?
Piece by Piece was the first record I worked on with Kelly. But I guess I should tell you how story time with Robert again. How did I get to that point? All right.
Yes.
So when I had my studio in Phoenix, Arizona, interning at studios, eventually I landed at a studio. The guy handed me the keys and said, "Then get your studio. I'll pay for whatever you need to outfit it. I'm an attorney. You're a music guy. I've never been to a studio, but I want a studio. So here's the keys. Here's my credit card. Outfit it. Mix music. Be good with it." So I did.
Wow.
So you basically managed it and ran it, but he owned it. Yeah,
owned the building and the gear in it, but I ran it like it was my own studio.
Wow.
That's amazing.
So good. So like the perfect situation that never happens. So don't count on that, kids.
Seriously.
So I was running the studio for a while and I ended up through my drum endorsement company that I had endorsement with meeting Lester Estelle, the drummer for Kelly Clarkson, who had the same drum endorsement. So we met out in California. I was like, "Hey, how you doing? Nice to meet you." We took a picture. That was about the end of it. But then fast forward, I was working in the studio with another buddy and he's like, "We need to hire my buddy Lester Estelle to come produce drums." I'm like, "I met Lester Estelle." So we flew him out to help produce drums on a record I was producing or was co-producing. And we just hit it off. Like all of a sudden we're like, "Are we the same guy?" Like, "Yes, we are." So we became like best friends that lived in different states and we'd always keep working together on stuff. So fast forward, the guy who owns the studio, who owned that studio, is coming to an end. So we're like, "All right, Robert, are we moving to LA, New York, or Nashville?" I had 6-month-old twins at the time, so Nashville it is. We moved to Nashville. I'm renting studios and borrowing studios from friends. And I had a band coming in from out of state. Lester happened to be in town with his band at the time, so we were meeting for lunch. I get a call that afternoon and said, "Hey, the studio you booked, Robert, is double booked. We got to kick you out. You're not going to be able to record this band." I'm like, "I have a band flying in from out of state for like a week. Where are we going to record?" And Lester's like, "Man, we just need to get our own studio." I'm like, "Yeah, dude." 6 months later, Lester and I owned a studio together. Like,
oh my God.
We opened a recording studio in the Nashville area and we've owned four studios together since then.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. So Lester's been my best friend for like 15 years. And so he's gone from different band to different band to different band, and eventually landed the Kelly Clarkson band gig. And he had to record drums on the Piece by Piece record and said, "I know the guy that needs to record these because I like that. Like, we work together well. I know how to get drum sounds. He knows how to play drums. Hey, let's be friends." So I recorded the drums on the Piece by Piece record. And then I guess they liked me. So from then forward, I got to work on the records. And then that's how I got my start with the Kelly camp.
So wait, going back to Piece by Piece, I'm confused. He played drums, you played drums,
He played drums. I recorded the drums. I pushed the buttons, put the mics on there, got the sounds. So, you know, he'd be in there. I'm like, "Snare," and just keep hitting snare until I dialed in the perfect snare sound, kick. And for every single drum, I had the mics just where I wanted them and all this stuff. Just got the sounds that we liked, I think would fit the pop record. And then we sent them in and they liked them. They're on the record. So I got credits on that record.
And that's in...
That's the gold record right there. Yeah.
Hey! And that was the song War Paint, right?
I did War Paint. I did Nostalgia. I think it was the two songs that we cut that made the record.
That's so cool.
We knew in the background, we knew that you and Lester were really close. I was hoping you were going to tell the whole like origin story of you and Lester. Yeah.
I didn't know the extent of it. I was like, okay, I know they're tight. And I saw something that they like had something with studio. I didn't realize it was four studios.
Yeah. And it was totally happenstance. Like one would come to an end because the guy was, he's selling the property. So we had to move our studio. And the next guy like found out didn't even own that studio, but we were paying him rent. And we're like, oh, this is great. So we had to, my attorney's like, get all your stuff out of there now. So we just moved our studio again to the first place we could find a place. Because we had work to do. We had to track stuff.
Yeah.
And eventually the fourth one was in his, the whole upper level of Lester's house was turned into a recording studio and still is. When we were working there. Now I've got my own studio here. He's got his studio there. Still best friends. Just we're able to work twice as much because I'm able to work 100% on time on my stuff, and he's able to work 100% of the time on his stuff. But yeah, we have a huge history together. Just joined at the hip.
I love that. Now, a question I have going a little bit into just to the talk show specifically, how are you guys, both of you, honestly, are you guys able to manage? Because I'm assuming aside from the Kelly stuff, you're also working on other projects as they come in. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. While I'm working on Kelly, I'm only working on Kelly, but maybe after I'm done working on that for the day, I start working on something else. And right. Then all summer.
Like, how do you juggle all that?
I think it's ADD. I think I prefer to work on multiple things. I'm more of a magazine guy, less of a novel. So I like having the different flavors and being able to diversify and not only work on Kelly Clarkson 100% of the time. I'm able to work on Kelly Clarkson and this band from Texas and this guy that lives in Germany and whatever else it may be. Cause it's all different and it keeps my blades sharpened, I guess. You know, I'm able to not just go, I know exactly what I need to do to Kelly's voice. I know exactly what I need to do to Lester's drums. I'm like, oh, new stuff. I have to figure out how to EQ this and that kind of stuff. And a lot of whiteboards, a lot of calendars on my phone, a lot of just notebooks full of who's paid me what, who's got deposits, who have like,
yeah,
it's just a lot of my own backwards way of organizing things, but it seems to work. So I just keep doing it.
And especially with Alt Me, and I know like, obviously the talk show is not going to be in LA anymore. You guys are moving to New York and that's just another layer to add on it. You're just like, oh yeah, and I'm traveling constantly. It's not like you're always in one home base, which probably is good for you. For me, that would freak me out, but it seems like that's your personality where you're just like changing it up and do things like that.
I love making life a story and being able to see different places, do different things. But actually I will be pretty much remote while with the shows in New York. I was half remote in LA, but I'm thinking I'm going to be about 100%, if not 99%, if not 100% remote for the New York stuff. I'll go out there and set stuff up, but I mix right. The show live right here. So I'll have on that screen up there, a multi-view where I can see all the different cameras and the teleprompter. So I can see what's going on up there. I've got over here, which you can't see, my comms stuff, so I can talk to my team and have like a microphone here I can talk to them with. And then I can control, I have a whole console thing over here, a whole bunch of faders you can't see that connect to my computer. Well, now in LA, but we'll be in New York, that when I move a fader here, it moves it there in New York. So, and it's all about one sixth of a second latency. So from the time I push a button here, it takes me about 1/6 of a second to realize to hear my change back after it goes to New York and comes back to my ears.
I was about to ask you, how is there not a delay? But I guess there's always going to be like this much. Smallest.
But I mean, 1/6 of a second. Think about it. If I was in the studio live and I heard something, it would take me 1/6 of a second to go over there and push the button. So it's nothing. They can't tell if I'm there or not, which is great. And I love my team so much. They're able to help me, support me while I'm doing this. I have the best team, like the best A2s and assistants who are there to move mics the way I like them. And you know, like all I have to do is hit my little foot switch and talk to him on the mic and say, hey, is blah, blah, blah happening? I'm like, we got you, Robert. Like, it's a great team, a solid team.
Dude, technology is so wild. The fact that you're able to live mix from 1,000 miles away, that is so impressive that they can do that now, because I can imagine that just not too terribly long ago, that was not a possibility.
They told us that this wouldn't be a possibility for the current setup. And then a couple of people on the team were like, challenge. So they made it work. Yeah.
Bet.
Yeah.
Bet. And especially, you know, I'm sure like when COVID hit, I'm sure that was something that was like almost inevitable. I mean, maybe it's a little different because everyone was remote, but like at some point everyone came back into the studio. I know it was definitely like limited in terms of, you know, who was able to come in.
Yeah. I was one of the people who were able to be on the stage. So I felt privileged in that manner, but I also took the job in season 2.
You did?
So I wasn't there for season 1. After they had kind of all got their stuff together, season 2, they asked me to kind of try out for the job, audition for the job. And then I got that and I was like, man, So I was flying back and forth during this pandemic. I met my whole team like this with masks on. So I didn't know what most of the people I worked with looked like for 2 years and vice versa. So the first time we saw each other without masks and everything was crazy. Just like, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Oh, I talked to you every day and I didn't know who you were. I mean, I'm 6'5". So a lot of people would like narrow that down. Like, oh, that's the tall guy. That's Robert. Yeah. But like everybody else, I'm like, I don't know who these people are, except for their voices. But yeah, the pandemic was a shift. And I think that gave the show a little heads up and advancement into how to do remote stuff, either with the producers, the writers, the guests, the audience. We had, you know, 40 TVs with remote audience members in them, like all this stuff. I think that kind of gave them a heads up into how to do that. So when I asked if I could be remote at all, they're like, oh, we already know how to do this. Just implement that extra little element so Robert can mix remotely. And
I think the pandemic
huge
changed TV. I mean, video, audio. I mean, it changed so many things because everybody figured out how to do it from elsewhere. And I also think that, and this is something that I don't know if I want to quite get to this question with you yet, but it was something that showed that the public, the audience, was willing to forgive more, I think, than we were willing. I mean, I'm an audio guy, I'm a radio guy, so I care a lot about how things sound, that the audience was willing to forgive a lot more than we thought that they were wanting to, because next thing you know, you've got people doing Zooms that are on TV live and the sound. I mean, for us, you know, audiophiles, the sound is terrible, but everyone's I don't care. I can see the guy. I can hear the guy. That's all I care about. So the fact that you guys figured out not only how to just do it, but to do it to nearly like 99.9% of the quality that it would be if everyone was in the studio together is an engineering feat on everyone's part at that show.
Yeah, the engineering team on the lot, on the stage, on the show, just the intelligence involved with that blows my mind. I just want one little fraction of the amount of intelligence they have to be able to do that kind of thing. And maybe they think the same thing about the way I do music, but I'm like, how do you know how to do this? And it's like, oh, you just do this, blah, 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 blah. Take this kind of flux capacitor and plug it into the hoop of bubbles and it works. And like, like, cool, man, you do that. I wish I knew what you're talking about. They did. They somehow pulled a rabbit out of the hat, and kudos to them, to us, to our team for just making it work. And I think you're right. Being an audio guy, I hear it and it's cringy sometimes to hear, you know, the audience clapping and like, there's nothing you can really do about it. It just sounds like horses clopping because the way that the transmission is over the internet and with Skypes and stuff. But then, I mean, there's only so much you can do, but I feel like you're right. People watched, the ratings went up, we won Emmys and like, wow, I guess it's content over quality sometimes, but we did the best with what we had.
Yeah, and speaking of which, you yourself are an Emmy Award winner. Are we wrong or are we wrong?
I've won 2 Emmys for both seasons I've been on the show so far, and we're up.
Congratulations.
We're up for a third. If this writer's strike will end, we'll find out if we got that or not, but thank you.
Yes.
And it's not just me. It's our team. It's our audio team. I can't do anything I do without the other 7 or 8 people on our team who do what they do. Like, and 100% that's true. That's not blowing smoke. That's not feeding egos. I cannot do what I do without the other people on my team.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, even if it were just for a few short hours, we saw that firsthand when we were out in LA and we got to hang out with all of you guys at the show. And so we completely understand what that means. But at the same time, like, did you ever take a moment after you won that first Emmy from the first season that you were on the show? Did you stop and kind of think, I did not think I would be in this position where I have an Emmy Award for something that I did? Like, did you ever think, I mean, especially when it comes to like music and audio guys, you know, we think Grammys, you know, we think other kinds of, you know, industry type awards. But I mean, like, dude, you got an Emmy sitting on your shelf. Like, I mean, was that a surreal moment for you?
It was in a different way. Like, I didn't understand the magnitude of how cool it is to have an Emmy because that was never on the radar for me. It was always, like you said, the Grammy was the Super Bowl for me. I wanted a Grammy. I wanted like gold.
Which we should make note that you've been nominated for a Grammy.
I've got a few nominations. Always a bridesmaid, never a bride. But
still, you get to put that on your business card, on your on your the letters on your glass window on your door, like Grammy nominee.
Yeah, it's cool. And but honestly, that's all it is. All it is something to put on your LinkedIn or your Instagram or your business card or whatever it is. Like, and I'm proud and humbled to be even nominated, much less winners for the Emmys. But it's just stuff, man. It's just things. Like, that's not changing my passion is for this industry. Like, I love making the art. I love capturing the music. I love doing, like, helping other people's dreams come true. Like, the no-name bands that you don't know yet. It might be their first time in the studio. It might be their 80th time in the studio. But I got to treat it the same as I treat Kelly's mixes or the stuff I did with Megadeth or whoever I've worked with. Because it's an art, and you can't discount that art, or even if you don't even like that style of art, you can't discount that just because your opinion's different than theirs. My job is to make it sound the best that it possibly can, to give it the best hope and chance of accomplishing whatever they want to accomplish with it. So, long answer to a short question. Hugely surprised by it. And my wife and Lester and everybody I know are saying, man, you should be more proud of this than you are. I'm like, I'm glad to be recognized, but really it's just a thing. And I was a little butthurt that I won an Emmy before a Grammy, if that's not the most pretentious thing to ever say. But they're like, look, it's your first year in TV and you just won an Emmy. It's your second year in TV and you won another Emmy. I'm like, I get it. You're right. So while I was out in LA on this last trip, I just came home and my wife surprised me. She's been trying to push so hard for this, because they've been in a box and under some shoes in my closet. She got a little curio cabinet and put it in one of our central rooms in the house and had them in there. And like, I got a little teary eyed. It's one of those things where she's more proud of me maybe than I am. And maybe it's just me hitting the grind, like, on to the next thing. Those are just things. Let's keep going.
I was going to ask you, I was like, do you feel like it's almost like, because I mean, I know I tend to get this way sometimes, not that I have an Emmy or a Grammy, but like, sometimes you're just like, when you hit an accomplishment, you're just like, okay, what's next? You're just like, what's the next thing? Like, you just want to keep going. It is.
And there's, I think I ran out of goals instead of setting like mile markers for myself. It's more of, how can I better myself and my craft?
That's great.
It used to be, I remember when I first graduated music school, I was like, well, I guess I want to have a Grammy in 10 years. And that was my goal. And I didn't get it. But it was literally just a goal. And now I'm like, I see how much people want Emmys and I see how much they aim it for those. And I have them. And I'm like, what did it change? Nothing. Like, it,
yeah,
it's, it looks cool. Like you said on a resume, on all the social media stuff, and they're great and I'm thankful for them, but it didn't change anything. You don't get like,
and it's not why you're doing the work, right? Because there are people obviously who are like chasing that clout,
right?
And
if that's your personality and that's what you go for and that's your goal and that's your idea of success, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's your thing. I think my thing is right now, as I get older and grayer and slower in my life, built for comfort, less for speed right now, I'm more of one of those like, let's just, what can I do to better myself and to make those around me more pleased with what I can give them and what I can do for them? So it's cool to have them and be recognized, but I think that's maybe just my personality. It's like, thank you. Let's keep going. Let's keep pushing. Let's get better.
Robert, you seem to be the kind of guy who accomplishes, who could accomplish something in a studio. Like, you either get the right sound or the right tone or the right mix from a couple of things, and that's going to excite you more than winning an Emmy, because this is like this is what you get excited about, is the work that you do and the rewards that come from that. Because the Emmys and the Grammys and all that, those are sort of the, if we're going to stick around with the food analogies, those are the whole like cake, that's the whole dessert. But like, the little pieces that you get when you're in the studio, you think, damn, that slaps. Or like, oh, I knew that was going to work. Or I knew we were going to get a boss sound from that. Is that like, that's more rewarding, right? Because I feel the same way.
It's the goosebumps. Yes, the goosebumps you get when something just comes together in the studio. Even if I'm here by myself, I'll be in here by myself mixing and like, you know, maybe get a little glassy eyed, or if it's a pretty song or a really cool sound, they're like goosebumps when something happens. I'm like, that's cool. But to me, it's more like just added another trick to my bag of tricks and added a new ingredient thing to my cookbook. I don't know. It is. It's exactly what you just said. It's exactly that.
Well, speaking of those kinds of moments, You were involved in the Kelly-Oke CD, correct?
Yes, I recorded the Kelly-Oke record.
Okay, so we've been on record with Jason, with Jesse, talking about how that vocal capture, that recording is probably the best of her career. The best she has sounded, the most crisp, the most beautiful sounding recording, not even just like her instrument, but because it is a art to capture a voice correctly, because it has everything to do with not even just the equipment that they're singing into, but the board that it's going into and all of the faders and where they are and where everything is. All of that has to work properly and be at the right place at the right time to make that magic moment. And that entire record is just one magic moment after the other. So we just want to say props to you. We always love to give credit where it's due. And that record in particular deserves its flowers because it is probably one of the best sounding of her entire career that really shows how she truly sounds. And I mean,
I'll agree.
Was that a big project for you?
So I'm going to back up a step. I 100% agree with what you said. I think her voice sounds incredible on that record. And to be 100% upfront with you, what I had to do with her vocal recording was helping Jason pick out which gear to buy, because he recorded her vocals separate after I recorded all of the instruments. So I 100% agree with you. I did not physically record her vocals, but I did help set up a signal chain, compressor, EQ stuff with Jason on. Here's what I think would sound good on her voice. But because of the way the record came together in a lot of her records and records in general, it's a lot easier sometimes for the artist to have control over things on his or her own time and schedule. So it's not like, hey, we have 2 days to record vocals. Get your butt in here, Kelly. We're going to do song, 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 song. It's more of, hey, this week, let's record vocals on this song. And the next week we'll do vocals on this song. And like, we'll come back and redo this one because we wanted to change a little something. So Jason and Kelly worked exclusively together to capture her vocals. I recorded all of the rest of it. So
I wanted to point out specifically one of Jeremy's all-time favorites, Fake Plastic Trees. That is just like, there is so much to it. There are so many layers, literally, figuratively, whatever.
Yeah.
And that's something you worked on. I'm assuming that's something that you mixed, because that is like insane. It is absolutely insane.
Yeah. So they have the mix I didn't do on these, but I did record all of it. So my job on the Kelly-Oke record, which including Fake Plastic Trees, was to mic up all the instruments, get the sounds, place all the instruments in the room the proper way, record it through the console, press the buttons, EQ stuff, add some reverb. I like it to sound done when I'm done with it before it even gets to the mixer. Right. And I just remember one of the biggest compliments was Jason saying, whatever you did to the drums, just print them as is. So that way, whoever's mixing this can't change them. And I'm like, well, that's a huge compliment. Thank you. But
how do you know where to like put stuff? I mean, that might be a dumb question. That probably just comes from experience. But like, how do you know all this? Like, how do you know where in the room and where the mics go?
That's the thing. Like back in the day, people who do what I do literally wore lab coats. They were technicians and they were engineers.
It's like Abbey Road style.
Yeah. It's so like they were like scientists in there, like, because you're dealing with electricity. That's literally what it is. It's capturing electricity in different frequencies of the sound wave, making the electric wave go up and down. So I have to figure out how to process that electricity. And I've learned the basics. I know how signal flows from point A to point B. I know it's going to go through this and change the sound a little bit. I can change the sound a lot. I can make it delay and echo. I can make it sound like it's in a bathroom or a cave. I can, whatever I need to do to manipulate these sounds. I get an idea from the producer, who was Jason in this case, on what the end needs to sound like. I'm like, I know how to do that because of my years of experience. 20 years ago, I'd be like, I'm going to try to figure out how to do this, but give me a few chances. But now I'm like, oh, I know exactly what it is. And it helps with musicians who have their stuff in tuned. Lester, who can tune his drums and go, oh, I need to switch to this snare drum for this song or this kind of drumstick or whatever it may be. But like, I just learned, like I was there a few days before the band in the studio and would walk around the room and make weird, all sorts of ungodly human noises to see what it sounds like echoing in the room. and be like, okay, so what I hear with my ears is what you're going to hear in the microphone. So if it sounds like junk over here, I'm not going to capture junk and then try to polish a turd. It's just going to be a shiny turd. Right. So, so let's find where it's going to sound good. Let's tune this guitar till it sounds good. Let's find that distortion sound or whatever it may be. And it was cool. Cause I mean, we worked with, there were horns and strings and,
yeah,
and like real instruments, not as much fake stuff, which are on a lot of records these days. And so to me, that's when I get excited. I'm like, oh, we get to mic up a real horn trio.
It's more of a challenge. Yeah.
So finding out what mics you have to work with at this particular studio, I'm like, oh, I've never used this one before. Let's just do it because I want to. Versus like, I know this is a surefire thing. We only have 10 minutes to make this happen. Put this mic right over here. You guys stand here and aim this way. I'm going to put this baffle behind you to keep the reflections down in the room. And like, it's just experience and a lot of trial and error. And like, if it sounds good, it is good. Hit record. Let's go.
If we could take just a real quick step back, because I know we're going to get asked, because you touched on both of the areas. Can you give a very brief description or the difference between a recorder and a mixer when it comes when it comes to making a record?
Sure. And there's a lot of gray lines here and a lot of blurred lines because I'm a recording engineer, I'm a mixing engineer, and I'm a producer. So the general difference is recording engineer will choose which gear to use, which preamps, which compressors, which effects, which kind of microphones, how to put them on there, how to capture the best sound. And their job typically ends there, is recording it and capturing it. And that's in a very raw stage. Then the mixer, stage two, will take those recordings and, you know, like I said earlier, polish them up, maybe pan some stuff over this way, like takes all these ingredients and tries to figure it out. So it goes from the farm to the kitchen. And now we're in here baking with stuff and trying to come up with a cookie. Now, who chooses the stuff on the menu is the producer. He's the one out there going, okay, we want to have this song sound like we don't want it to sound like Billie Eilish anymore, even though she was the one who made this song. We want it to sound more like a Queen. I don't know, make something up. Like, we want this part to sound like a Radiohead song. We want this part to sound like something else. So I'm like, ah, they typically like this kind of snare sound. They kind of like these echoey guitars. So as a producer, they're saying, this is what it's to sound like. I'm the puppeteer, blah, 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 blah. You guys dance, monkey. So at the recording engineer needs to take that vision, and the mixing engineer needs to take that vision even further to completion. So those are the big differences. One records, one takes the recordings and mixes them, and the other one, the producer, is the one who's like, here's what I want, make it happen.
So what was the involvement then? Because I know you also worked on, I would say, about half or so of the most recent Christmas album. So what was your involvement on that in terms of like those steps?
So on her records, she has, because of her label deal, I think they have one particular guy who can, the same guy mixes all her stuff. And okay. So I don't even have, it's not even on the table for me to do so, but maybe someday. So I've recorded all of her stuff. Okay. So Jason likes working with me, I guess.
I hope so.
We work well together, and I've been with a team and I've developed a rapport with all the band members, and so I know what they sound like because I've, you know, mixed 500 and something of their Kelly-okies, and recorded and mixed for the show. So I know the little nuances of each player. I know what they like to have. I know what they like to have in their headphones. So I guess it's easier. I'm an easy choice. So on the most recent records, including the Christmas record, I've been the recording engineer on those, and kind of a pre-mixer, because like I said, a lot of times Jason will be like, I like whatever you did, print it with those effects so that way they can't undo it.
Which is the best compliment.
Yeah, it is. Yes, and that's great. A producer's decision. He's like, I like what you did with it, do that. Because I can record, as a recording engineer, I can record it safely, which is a very generic, plain, vanilla track. This is a snare drum, this is a vocal, this is a whatever it is. Giving the mixing engineer complete rein on like what they want to do with it. I can hand all the creativity to the mixer, which is what,
but you don't want
to
do that.
That's a typical, I would do that unless I'm told differently. And I usually ask, do you want me to be pretty conservative with my mix or with my recordings? Or do you want me to carve some stuff out as if I were mixing it? And Jason's always like, make it sound the best you can make it sound. When I hand it over to mix it, I'm like, all right, so I'm doing things that I would tell other people not to do because you can't undo it. But I already, my experience gives me that fortunate ability to discern what can work and what won't work. And maybe the mixing engineers are cussing me out from wherever they're mixing it, going, why did he do this? But like, I'm not doing anything that's totally outlandish, but I am trying to make it sound right. done when the time I hand it over to make their job easier.
Yeah. So what was the involvement then? I know there's probably certain things you can't talk about yet, because by the time this comes out, we'll probably, I don't know, 2 weeks or so till the new album comes out. Did you work on that as well?
I did. I worked on a handful of songs on the new record. And my involvement on that was just recording drums. So
recording drums. Yep. Okay.
So this was done remotely from Lester's studio here in Tennessee. So he's like, dude, I got to record drums on this record. Come over here and record me. I'm like, got you, bud. So
perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And done.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's such a good musician. He's such a good player. It makes my job easy.
I'm assuming that you were working on a lot of the songs that Jason was producing. Is that correct?
I typically only work on the ones that Jason produces. Because a lot of mix engineers, a lot of producers have their team, and I'm part of Jason's team, I think.
So because we know, because Jesse has his team and Jason has his team. So then do you and Lester sort of talk with Jason and get like an idea of how something is supposed to sound, and then you two go into the studio and kind of make it happen?
Yeah. And like on the Piece by Piece record, for an example, Jason came into the studio so he could kind of produce the drum parts. And I would ask, like, do you want like I call it a douchey snare, which is like, doo. Like, it sounds like you're saying the word douche when you hit the snare. Or like a bright poppy one, or a dry snare, or a snare that sounds like you're in a cavern that goes on forever. Like, what kind of snare sound do you want? Lester's listening to the same questions and going, I know which snare I need to do and how to tune it. And I'm like, I know what mic I need to do and where to put it. Like, it's all a big team effort. But I think now that we've worked with each other so much, Jason trusts us and he's like, here's the song. They want it to sound like Queen. And we're like, gotcha. And we just go do our thing. Like, we don't even need to have a team meeting on it. We just do our thing, and that's what it is. So yeah, so it's we've got a lot of liberty to do that. But some of these records were pieced out, like the Piece by Piece record and this new record, Chemistry, we track the drums with no one else there, like from here in Nashville. But like the Christmas record, the Kelly-Oki record, recorded out in LA in a couple different studios, and we were all there together. There was a whole team of people playing at once. So yeah, there's different ways to do the things, but the new record, my involvement is just recording, engineering, and recording the drums.
But at the same time, you've had some experience with the rest of the record, and this is where I want to sort of transition into what we got to experience when we were with you in Los Angeles. What a lot of people who were at Kelly's birthday show maybe didn't realize, because a lot of times when you go to a concert, you know where the soundboard is, like that's where the mix is happening, and all of that is doing sort of the live mix of the show itself. And maybe sometimes there might be a board elsewhere in the room. Maybe it's like on the side stage. Or what most people didn't realize, though, is that you were in the depths below the stage while Kelly and the band are on stage performing. You were down below and you were handling an completely different mix of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. When you sign up to do pro audio like I do, you learn that no one's most of the time going to know your name, what you do, or where you are ever. So I'm used to being, you know, in a room with no windows. I'm used to being towards the back of the booklet when you look through the CD booklet for credits. Like, like as much involvement as I have and creativity as I get to put into these things, it's one of those jobs where a lot of people will never know or care who you are, but you're an integral part in making the music sound how it makes. So at the Belasco show, the birthday of the Belasco, I was down under the stage in a little dungeon room, which you guys got to see. I had a mixing console and some monitors, and kind of was bumming vision, line of sight to the cameras so I could see what was going on stage. And I was recording the whole show. So any of these clips you've seen online or whatever have been my recordings, and I'm doing my own mix down there, separate, kind of just a direct split from what you guys are hearing while you're watching the concert live upstairs in the arena, in the room. Like, I'm taking those same signals and processing them completely different and making sure they're being recorded cleanly. I was down there doing my own mix, and just most people didn't even have a clue I was down there, which is fine. I kind of prefer that, but. I don't know, maybe because I have kids, I've learned to listen to do like multitask. I don't know what it is, but also like when I'm listening to a mix, I'm listening to however many channels I'm listening to at once. So if we recorded, I think we had 70 or 90 tracks, 96 tracks. I think 96 different microphones or signals or pathways. I'm recording all of this at once. I'm listening to all of them for something that's going out of character. Like, why did the bass all of a sudden sound a little weird? So that tweaks my ear. If it doesn't sound
right,
if it doesn't sound right, like, I will tune you out for a second. Like, hold on, what's going on? And that's just because I've listened to so much music in my life and I know how I work and how I capture those sounds. If something sounds out of place, I'm like, I wouldn't have done that. Why did it do that? So I'm able to multitask a little bit. And it is like spinning plates, but that's what I've done for 20 years. I know how to spin plates. But you're right. Sometimes the gear fails. Sometimes there's something that'll sneak up on you. You don't realize that when you're recording 96 tracks and one track is muted all of a sudden, maybe that, like, a cable goes wrong or something, and you might not notice it. My job is to notice it. My job is to go back and look at the waveforms and Pro Tools, to listen, use my ears. But sometimes, like, how would I know if the mic on the ride cymbal went out if he hasn't played the ride cymbal all day? And so if it's something I notice later, I let him know, like, hey, man, we just recorded that song, and I've noticed the last two songs we did, the ride cymbal's been muted, not because of me, but, like, the cable's gone or the mic went out or something like that. Something happened, but I lost that signal and just now noticed it. I know that Lester didn't play the ride cymbal, so it's fine, but we need to fix that. Like, that's a total example. But yeah, while you were down there, Pro Tools, all of a sudden I got the little spinning wheel of death, the little beach ball that just sat there going, like, well, let's go one of two ways. I either have everything we've been recording for the last 30 minutes or I don't. So
thank God you did.
That's when I sweat. It's when it's not my fault, or it is my fault, whatever it may be. But, like, that wasn't. And I don't know if we're going to have to redo this. And we have to tell Kelly Clarkson, hey, we have to redo everything we just did for the last 30 minutes.
Come back. Come back. Yeah. We know you're, like, you just left 10 minutes ago. Can you come back? Yeah.
There's a lot of stress that goes with that. But, I mean, I'm so easygoing. It takes a lot to really stress me out. So when something like that happens, I'm like, oh, crap.
I will say when your Pro Tools went down while we were down there with you, the way that Pam and I just sort of slowly started to back away, like, oh, damn, like, something might go wrong here. We need to make ourselves scarce. But, you know, again, you know, you and your team all handled it well. I mean, you had to communicate to everybody up on stage. Hey, look, I got an issue with Pro Tools. We got to take five. You figured it out. Everything came back. And then they were off and running again.
Yeah.
I want to kind of veer off a little bit now into the talk show with Kelly Oakey. And what is kind of the process? Because you told us a little bit when we were in LA, you explained to us once the Kelly Oakey is finished, what the process is from when you have it to air. But I'm sure a lot of people don't know about that. But what is the process even before that, when the band and Kelly and, you know, decide and, you know, all the clearance, everything gets approved for the song that they're going to do? They're like, all right, we're going to be doing, I don't know, whatever song on Thursday. Okay. How far in advance do you find out? Do you have to plan out all the different setup ahead of time? How does that work?
So my prep work from all this would be, I get an email from Jason, along with, I don't know how many other people are on this email list, but I get a PDF from him weekly, and it's updated with what Kelly Oakey's we're doing for what episode for that week. And sometimes I can see a couple weeks in advance, and sometimes there's a lot of gaps in there saying hasn't cleared, haven't picked a song yet. And, like, ultimately Kelly will say yes or I don't want to do that song, or I want to do that song, or I don't want to do that song, whatever it may be. So, but once I get that list from Jason, it's pretty much set. It might change, may not, but mostly that gives me an idea of what we're doing. So I have a spreadsheet I keep by myself. I put those in there. So I always have a list of all the songs we've done so far and the ones coming up. As well as when that episode airs. So I have an idea of, like, this one might not even air for a week or for 2 weeks, and this one airs tomorrow type thing. So I gotta pay attention to all that stuff to know kind of what order I need to mix them in. But I'll see all that, and this is a personal thing to me. I like to listen to those original tracks that she's covering. So if it's a Billie Eilish song, I'll go listen to the Billie Eilish song and just listen to it on repeat the morning of the show. So I'm learning, like, oh, this is a part where she has this weird effect on her vocal. This is a part where the guitars are all of a sudden filtered and sound like they're in the room next door. Like, I'm just learning the different elements subconsciously as I'm setting up my stuff for the day. It's just playing on repeat.
Do you know where, because obviously they're not playing a full song ever because they have that, like, 90 second time limit. Do you know what they're going
to
cut out?
Sure. Yeah. So I also have access to, I'm going to go on a limb here and hope that I'm allowed to talk about this. I have access to...
There's like a Dropbox or something, right?
Yes, so the Dropbox folder, which has, like, all of the different rehearsal mixes that Jason and the band y'all have been working with, as well as Kelly has been given to learn where it changes. Like we're only doing this verse, this chorus, go into a bridge, into the chorus or something like that. And that's kind of a typical way we do the songs, usually a verse, chorus, a breakdown or a bridge, and then like finish out the song somehow with an abbreviated chorus or a big chorus or whatever it may be, depending on the song. So I have access to all of that and I can hear like, oh, we're going to do this. I'm not too concerned with that arrangement as much as I am about the sounds they have. Like, oh, this is an 80s song. I want like a cool 80s delay and effect on Kelly's vocal. Like happier than ever. I want a really cool, like I want it to be start out really tight and small and just blow up into this big song. So I have these ideas. I'm already recording in a certain way to get to that point. So that's like my prep work, is to kind of listen to those songs as a reference, just to get an idea of what the original artist was doing. And I know Kelly likes to mimic it, but Kelly makes it her own. So right. I have to plan for getting a little creative and not just cloning the original, but giving it some personality that Kelly would approve of. And my job is really to protect her and her vision of the song. So, because anything that I do affects what you guys hear. Like I'm pretty much the final audio step between what we record and what you guys get to hear on the show or online or wherever you're watching this and listening to it. So some things I don't ask her. I never have asked her. I never asked Jason. I always just do something and send it and hope that they like what I've done. And a lot of times I get like, oh, hell yeah, that's killer. Every now and then it's like, hey, just turn that effect down a little bit because it gets hard to hear some of the stuff. I'm like, totally cool. Doesn't hurt my feelings whatsoever. I went out on a limb doing it, but that's where I get to be creative and kind of like, What if we do this? It'll be cool. I think this is cool. And it works well with Darren and his lighting situation. Like Darren and I talk a little bit like, hey, what you thinking? But not very often. We're pretty tight knit ship. Everybody knows what each other's doing and we all kind of share a vision without even having to communicate.
You sort of touched on it a little bit there when you were saying about the air dates of songs that are getting recorded. And you sort of shared with us, too, that it's not uncommon for you to finish up a mix of a song a couple days prior to air date, right?
So I think in LA, you were telling us about that. You're like, yup, I have to finish one like after this film shoot, and then I have to submit it, and it airs in 2 days.
So,
like, oh my God.
This is my man purse. This is what I carry. I've got my in-ears.
It's called a backpack.
Oh, that's what they call this. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
In person. It is very man Percy.
I have my in-ears, which I have right now,
yep.
Which I know very, very well as a set of over the ear earphones that are always in here. I've got a bag full of adapters and hard drives, which are backups of my hard drives I have here in this studio. This is actually the Belasco show. They all look like this. I have five or six of them in there. And I have a Pro Tools rig that I carry with me everywhere. And I take it with me literally everywhere I go. It's either in my car or on my back. So this last week, I was driving across country. It's a whole other story. From LA, packing up my stuff out there at the studio and my apartment and everything, and driving back across country with my son to make it like a boys trip out of it. It's back to Nashville. And halfway on this trip, I get, hey, since this writer's strike is happening, we're moving around some air dates. I need this song mixed. I need to turn it in tomorrow. And I'm like, fun. I'm going to be on the road for 16 hours. So I get my butt up at 5:30 in the morning, set up my Pro Tools rig in a hotel, and I'm mixing a Kelly-Oki song, like referencing it on my phone, referencing it on my computer, listening to it in my in-ears, on my over-the-ear headphones, making sure it sounds good and everything, put it in the rental car. I'm like, good. Sent it off and it aired the next day.
Does your son drive?
No, he's
great.
That's the whole thing is this. The whole reason
you can't even do it in the car.
Yeah, the whole reason we're making this trip across country instead of just flying out there and shipping stuff over is because he's about to learn to drive. He's about to be 15 and we're going to start teaching him how to drive. He and his twin sister. So like, let's just bring this little car I had out in LA for a work car to Nashville and they can learn to drive on that. So I was driving. I couldn't even like, here, you take the wheel, I'll do this. Like, I would have died. So
no. I was going to say, that would have helped you out so much if you had like, and even like an hour to like just be on your laptop. It wouldn't have been the most comfortable, but it would have been doable.
Yeah,
but
like I would have just done it and then like found a Starbucks or something, uploaded it and gone. But like, it's, again, the convenience of technology. Like I have three seasons of Kelly-Oki's right here and their mixes and I can mix things and I have like a little miniature version of my studio all in this little bag that goes with me everywhere. And if this ever gets stolen, I'm screwed. I mean, I have backups of everything, but people would have access to things they should not have access to.
Yeah.
You need to like air tag everything.
Oh, everything's air tagged. And password protected and everything like that. But still, like, there's so many Pro Tools sessions on there of albums, and just I save everything and have redundant copies of everything, but they'd have that all. If they found a way to get in there, then I'm screwed. Like, a lot of people would be mad at me.
All right, so
no one ever find Robert.
Yeah.
No, he is very elusive. Weirdest place you've mixed a Kellyoke?
Weirdest place I've mixed a Kellyoke? I have mixed there's so many places, like a lot of hotels. Most of them I'm doing at the studio in LA or here.
You threw the example of like a Starbucks.
I don't mix in public. I would mix in the truck or car before and then go in there just to upload them, but I won't mix where anybody else can hear it just for confidentiality.
Of course.
And like even with headphones on, you'd still hear cafe latte for blah blah blah, like going on in the background. And I'm not gonna stand up like, everybody shut up, I'm trying to mix.
You have no idea how important job.
You don't even know what I'm doing right now. Yeah. So
okay.
Yeah, a lot of hotels, a lot of I've mixed other songs in cars before, like in plane. Oh, I've mixed on a plane. I've mixed Kellyoke on a plane.
Right on.
I always finalize in a quiet area just to make sure that it sounds solid before I send it on. But I've airports, planes, couches, random places. Yeah.
Couches.
Oh, I mixed one at Belasco because it was a last minute thing. And
that's like, right.
I think that's the one you were talking about. Yeah. Okay. So favorite Kellyoke that you've worked on? I know it's a very loaded question, but if there's like one that immediately comes to the forefront of your mind.
I've said Billie Eilish's name way too many times on this podcast.
So that's all you're going to think about.
That's literally one of my, that is one of my favorite. That's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah, the Happier Than Ever song.
Yeah.
Just because we got really creative with that one and it was fun. But also like there's like legends, like Dolly Parton comes on, sings 9 to 5 with Kelly. And like, to me, I'm up there like bawling, like it's a grown man just crying, like I'm mixing Dolly Parton. These moments,
such a bucket list.
These moments don't elude me. I'm like, I'm not so far removed from, you know, real life that I just pass it off like that's just Dolly Parton. Like, I'm still starstruck by like what I do. I love every single day I went to the stage. I loved it. Like, it was still magical to me. And I use that word a lot, aware, like, I'm amazed I have a job that I get to work with the people I work with, and I get to do what I do, and people pay me to do it. I'm like, a lot of people just want to be in the same room with Kelly Clarkson, which I do too. Like, I love being in the same room as her, but like,
yeah,
but I get paid to be there and I get to mix it. And I know every nuance of her voice after 500 and something different Kellyokes, to like every, like the way she breathes, the way she says her P's or T-H's or whatever. Like, I know
that's so
every
funny
little nuance of it because I've had her soloed up in my studios for years now. And it's, I think that's a good thing, but like, yeah, like I guess Happier Than Ever is probably the best, my favorite one.
Whatever the first one. Yeah. Now, the other,
yeah.
There you go. What artist or song that she has yet to cover is on the top of your list? Could be either one.
See, I don't know what she did season one because I wasn't there, and I don't remember what I did yesterday because she might have already covered this stuff. She did Jimmy Eat World finally, which is one of my favorite bands.
Did the middle. Yeah.
Incubus is one of my favorites, which I think.
I feel like I've heard a lot of back and forth with Incubus, and was Jason the one to say no?
Jason hates Incubus.
Why? They're so good.
We have it on tape now. We have it on tape.
You don't have to do Drive. They have, I mean, it's a great song, but they have
that,
way more
that
than Drive.
Song ruined it for him. I think he heard that song and was like, this just sounds like a knockoff Lifehouse. I'm like, it's nothing like that at all. They're such good musicians.
Oh my God.
I think he wrote it off at that point in his life.
No,
to where he's just like, nah, I'm not gonna
so
do
much
it
more.
I know. And
start playing like Pardon Me or something like that, or like Wish You Were Here,
like,
and like
Wish You Were
see
Here,
see if he picks up on it.
All this stuff. There's
Dig. I love Dig. Like, I mean, I'm still saying singles, but they're not Drive.
Yeah, but then you can go to like, I mean, a lot of those songs, his reasoning, like, which one would we do? We couldn't air some of them. I'm like,
that's true. Like, lyrically,
yeah,
honestly,
yeah, like, you couldn't do like Megalomaniac or anything like that, but like,
yes. Yeah.
I mean, there are so many records they've done. There's a song somewhere, but then like, why would you cover an obscure one? No one would be like, oh, I love
that's
this song,
true.
But she's done it before. So who knows?
Yeah.
But I guess also she doesn't want to learn a song she doesn't know. I don't know that she has listened to it. a lot of Incubus in her life. I don't know. Maybe she has.
That's well, I will back you up on the Incubus. I once had the opportunity to see them, and I didn't go because it didn't start till midnight. Oh. It's one of the biggest regrets I have is not going because I was like, I'm tired. Oh, I had, and I'm like, damn it.
I had tickets to see them here in Nashville, and then they canceled. I think it was the COVID thing. But I can't remember why they canceled it. But they canceled it for some reason. And I was like, no, I finally get to see. I still haven't seen them live. And they've been one of my top like three favorite bands.
I've actually had the chance to see them a couple times. I've met the band. They're great guys. Gosh. They're nice guys.
Goals.
Yeah, it was great show. Excellent, excellent show. And this was years and years ago. I mean, this is like 2004, 2005 or whatever. But it was still excellent show. Is there anything that Kelly does vocally that can still surprise you?
Freaking everything she does surprises me. I'm like, how do you?
Because you say that, you know, you know her, like, you know every little nuance of her voice, but have you gotten like a performance you just thought, dang?
Yeah, like, there are times where she just goes way up there beyond like human hearing and just sings whistle tone, like way up there. And that's I'm like, how do you do that on pitch? And how do you do that with such good tone? Like, you're really honestly one of the best singers in the world.
I mean, we've been fans of hers for 2 decades or so, and like every day I'm still just like, how does she just keep one-upping herself? I don't understand. So I can imagine when you're in a studio or whatever every day, you're just like, it's just, I don't know. I feel like my jaw would just drop because you don't know what's coming.
That's true. And you and I are listening to her voice differently. I'm also listening technical things and like frequencies and the way she's singing certain things with the microphone.
And that goes right over my
head. And sometimes like she could be singing like the word dog food on repeat, and it'll take me like 10 minutes to realize, oh, you're not even singing words. Because like just because I'm not even thinking about lyrics. Yeah. I'm not thinking about that way where you're going, oh, this is such a beautiful song. I'm like, oh, that's what it's singing about. I'm more listening to on how is she, like how on pitch she is, how big her vibrato is. And like, she can do it all. So I'm listening to it in amazement that way, like, how are you so on key? How are you able to pull like vibrato out and go from head voice to chest voice so quickly? Like, being a vocal performance major previously, like, I know how helps, hard probably. That is. And she's freaking good. Yeah.
It also really impresses me. Just like last thing, just really impresses me because like if it's not obvious, I'm not a musician. I'm not techie. I come from like the music business side. So, and I think it's really cool and also really important that there's so many people out there that have different hats, listen for different things, know what to listen for. Because if we were all listening to the same thing, that would be boring and it wouldn't be creative at all.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. Because like I'm not a musician at all. So like I don't hear certain things and I'm like, oh, that would be a good single. That's what I hear. That's what I listen for. Like, I don't know. It kind of blows my mind whenever I talk to anyone who is in the Kelly camp, because you guys are just so knowledgeable on like all the different little nuances. It just kind of blows my mind. I'm just kind of fangirling for a second. It's just, it's really cool. It's a really incredible thing what you're doing. And I don't know if you realize, but it's just from an outsider perspective, my mind is constantly blown. It really is from everything that you guys do.
That's a compliment. Thank you very much. Yeah. I'm still in all half the time I get to work with these people. So they somehow let me in, but I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll add to that in that it shows that she has kept a lot of the core same team around her for as long as she has, that with each new project, it just sounds better and better and better because everybody just knows how everyone works. And you guys, like you were saying, how you barely have to talk to each other anymore because you just know how each other is going to do something. And that's the sign of a really, really well-oiled machine around her. So, you know, props to you guys because it is really an incredible thing to see both from afar and in person, because we got to do both, and it was very, very impressive to see how well everybody works together. And it's a testament to just the talent of every single person that she surrounds herself with. So again, many props to you for the great work that you do.
Thanks, man. And I think you're right, and I've said this before, and this is true everywhere, but a lot of times you're not hiring or working with the same team of people because they're the best at what they do, but maybe because you guys get along the best and you have the chemistry. That you guys just gelled well, and like there's not a bad egg in the dozen. There's nothing that's like holding everybody back. But in this case, like we've got the top of the line musicians and talent, as well as a team that works really well and knows each other, the ins and outs, the nuances. We can predict what each other's going to do. And I get to kind of sit back and see the whole band do that together. Like they're so tight knit. It just makes my job so easy. And Kelly keeps that. She recognizes this and keeps that, because it's hard to find people who are great at what they do that don't have egos and great at what they do,
right,
who aren't going to go spill things to TMZ or like, we're the most chill group of guys and girls. And everybody gets along. We have lunch together every week. We go to the same restaurant, sit at the same table, have the same waiter and get the same food. But like,
it's just
everybody that works behind the scenes with like Claudine and Rachel and everybody who you do see on the TV screen, like we all gel, like everything just gels, and we have group texts and we send each other memes and Instagram reels, and like just because like I'll send this one to Rachel because I know this is gonna make her laugh, and this one's gonna go to Kyle, right, and Jocko because that's their personality, and Lester and I send each other audio gear and random memes all the time, and Jason will text what kind of old fashioned he's drinking.
How stoked is Lester for his new kit?
Loves it.
I bet.
Yeah, it's such a pretty kit. It's so sexy.
Ooh. Took the words right out of my mouth. It'll look good.
Yeah,
I have to see that.
It does. I think I'm gonna steal his Belasco kit from him.
Attaboy. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, me too.
We'll keep that between us. All right. So you mentioned the key word just a second ago of chemistry. Favorite song off the new record?
I like okay, no so pressure. Like there's so many different ones. Like Red Flag Collector is an easy one to say is my favorite just because it's so different. And I love
Jason said the same thing, but probably for a different reason.
I love the things that happen, especially at the top of the song. It's just so different. Mm-hmm. And the things that you have to pay attention to in the song that to me is awesome. If it's not Red Flag Collector, I'm going to say High Road just because it's got this, it's the vibe of it, man. It's just,
yeah,
it just makes me so happy.
I've been listening to Rachel and Justin's version on Spotify. Because like we spoke with Rachel a couple months ago, listened to her band stuff and in preparation for it. But then when it didn't click until it was mentioned at the Belasco that like it was the same. So now I've been listening to High Road like on repeat. And I mean, like, listen, it's just, I'm so excited to actually hear a different version of it.
I'm excited for Rachel. I'm excited. And Justin. I'm excited for people to hear this song. Like that song makes me happy.
Lyrically, it's so good. And the chorus just is so infectious.
You just want to dance to it. Like you can't not.
You just want to dance to it. You just want to like sit. Yeah. Like put your arm. I don't know. It's really good.
Yeah. So that and Red Flag Collector are probably my two favorite off the record. There's so many different parts though. And like certain lines of other songs and I don't know, like some throwbacks, some references, some things I like. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love that.
He is an Emmy Award winner. He is a Grammy nominee and a food aficionado when it comes to when he's trying to compare something to something else. He's Robert Venable, and we are so glad that you could spend some time with us, dude. It's so good to see you again, and hopefully we get to see you again soon.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on, both of you.
Thanks so much, Robert.
Yeah. See you guys.
Thank you so much to Robert for joining us on the podcast today. I love talking to him. He is so cool, and I love him and everyone on the band who was just so open to like talking to us about the little technicalities that they do. You know, it's really nice when they kind of sit down and like we hear about them talking about their passion and their involvement and everything, and it really for me at least really helps paint a picture. It's kind of like the big puzzle piece. I'm like what they do, what the whole like every karaoke, every album, like what each person does, and everything like it takes a village. So I love that he was able to sit down with us and really walk us through his involvement on all these different projects.
I really wish everybody could have seen Pam's face when we were under the stage.
I wish I could have seen my face.
Yeah, when we were under the stage at the Belasco Theater and Robert's showing us what's what on his board and with Pro Tools and everything that he was working with, because just the doe-eyed amazement in Pam's face was so awesome, because it was literally like she was seeing something. I don't even want to say it for the first time, because it probably was the first time you'd really kind of seen something like that.
Well, no, I had seen like a soundboard like that, but I never really seen it being used.
Yeah, and like in real time because like we said in the interview, I mean, he really was keeping one ear on what was being played directly above us and being recorded, and then at the same time he's carrying on a conversation with us, showing us what's, you know, what is what on the board, and isolating vocals and adding in vocals where there were none, and just the work that he does. And I work on a board every single day for my job, and what he does impresses me. So it was so great to kind of get a little bit into the nuts and bolts about his job, and he's just, and on top of that, he's just a stand-up, awesome, nice guy. And again, proving once again that Kelly surrounds herself with some really, really great people.
Yeah, I as you were just talking right now, I went back to look at some of our photos from that day. I'm going to ask him if we can share one of these, because to be honest, I don't think there's anything here that's like gatekeepy. There's no photo, there's no like monitors or anything. It's literally just him posing with his board.
Yeah.
So I would love to share this with the entire class if I have the clearance to do so.
He clear out some stuff that wasn't public at the time.
Yeah, it is a beast, this soundboard. So it's really a science what they do. He said that,
yeah.
And it really is a science. Kind of blows my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
So Robert, thank you again for joining us. We really appreciate it, and we love learning from you and hearing all your stories. And thank you all for listening to this episode. As always, if you listen on the Spotify app, we would love if you left us a rating there, and same on the Apple Podcasts app. If you can leave us a rating and or a review, we would really appreciate it. We're going to be back next week. I think next week is our episode where we are going to be bringing on a couple of Vegas locals,
yes,
who happen to be Kelly super fans and friends of ours, who are just going to give us some last minute like tips and tricks about like how to navigate Vegas, because obviously neither of us are from there. So looking forward to that. For anyone who happens to be going to the chemistry residency, you'll be hearing some other little things to keep in mind for when you go visit.
Absolutely. And of course, don't forget, you can catch us live at Planet Hollywood, July 29th, Saturday. Make sure you check out missintopodcast.com for all the information there. We are so excited to bring our first live episode, and oh, cannot wait to get out to Vegas a little more than a month and a half or so from now.
Yeah, we have some fun surprises and stuff in store. So if you're going to be in town, please join us. We would really appreciate it. I think that about wraps it up. We will see you guys next week. Bye.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Miss Into Podcast. Miss Into Podcast was written and produced by Jeremy and Pam. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you'll be the first to know when a new podcast is posted. Find us and continue the conversation at Miss Into Podcast on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Find more at missintopodcast.com.